You were listening to Ladies POV with Yo Amika. Let's get this show started.
Hello, hello, hello. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are listening to this. This is Ladies POV with Yo Amika. I am Mika and she is
Yolanda.
And again, this is Ladies POV. Powered by Anchor. You can find us on all streaming platforms for your listening pleasure. So today, we are talking about everything that has been going down in the sports world. If you've been under a rock, then, you know, you've been missing out on a whole lot. But we're going to be talking about social injustice, racism, all of that good stuff in sports. So, we have two guys joining us today. We have Big Reg from Post, Position on Sports Talk Show, and Lake Lewis, CEO of Sports Journey and a Washington football team reporter. Hello, guys, and thank you for joining us today.
Yes, thank you.
How are you doing? Thanks for having us on.
Pleasure being here. Good to be back with you, ladies.
Yes, and it's been a long time coming for you, Lake, so I'm glad that we could finally, you know, make this happen.
AT's family, so yeah, I definitely appreciate you finally having me on.
Yes.
So Lake, how have you guys been doing? I know it's the first time talking with you, so with the pandemic going on and everything, and I know that you're covering, you know, Washington sports a lot there, so how is that working out for you?
I feel blessed, you know, just another day, get up, you know, it's Sunday, you know, so I definitely feel blessed. It's business as usual here. Actually, as far as the amount of people that can go out to practice because of COVID, they've limited it. At least that's what was explained to me. I will say this in all seriousness, the team did call me actually and directly. And explained it to me and said that everything would be fine. They love me. They love my coverage. Ron Rivera follows me on social media since Jason Wright follows me on social media. Julie Donaldson, of course, is a friend. So, you know, I'm going to let that one, you know, simmer. And I think everything will be fine. But I was initially disappointed, not to go off here, but I was initially disappointed because I want to make sure we have our own faces covering that team. And have representation of it, not just bringing it in the front office, but making sure it's covering the players on the field, which more than likely represent our faces as well. So that's where I am. It wasn't about Lake, it was about us. And you guys know what I mean by us. So
Absolutely. I was surprised when you weren't out there. I'm like,
yeah, I was too. And you know, and the irony is I live out here. I live, you know, 5 minutes from the facility. So, you know, if you're talking about COVID and worrying about, you know, people coming from different places, I'm right here. And so, but it's all good because actually it's giving me a chance to do some things around the house and with the family and stuff like that. Got to cut some grass later. So, you know how it goes.
Oh, that rain has been awful. I mean, you know, whatever. Rain, sun.
Right.
I know. That's terrible.
Okay, Big Reg, how about you? How have you guys been handling it over there with the posts?
It's been interesting since March because of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. We, like everyone else, we had to scramble and reinvent how we were going to do our weekly show. Mm-hmm. So we went from being inside a studio to doing it from home. And as a lot of people have said, this pandemic it changed a lot of things, but some things it just accelerated. Mm-hmm. So it took us from going to a studio each and every week to do this show to creating our own YouTube page and platform, creating our own Facebook page and platform to now we're doing everything ourselves. So it was a blessing in disguise. So
trust me,
you guys are better for that though in the long run, trust me.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I'm happy that, you know, this kind of happened. Like, me and Yo have had our own bouts with this anyway, but, you know, this has just enhanced my skills a bit, you know, so I can do all things. A Jill of all trades, if you will.
That's it.
But so I wanted to get into what's been happening, you know, as of lately. Like, when everything started happening, like, I reached out to Yo and I was like, we have to do a show on this, because teams are, you know, postponing games and, you know, we're possibly about to sit out the season because we have yet another shooting in Wisconsin this time, Kenosha, Wisconsin, with Jacob Blake. Mm-hmm. And, you know, me and Yo were talking before, and I don't know, the stories just seem like they're conflicting, but the gist of it is another Black man has been shot. He did not die, thank God, but he was shot in the back 7 times. Why did they have to shoot this man in the back 7 times? I have no idea. No one else knows either. The police just keep doing it, and they keep doing it, and they keep doing it. And people are frustrated. We're frustrated. We're frustrated, and we have every right to be frustrated and hurt and everything else. And people are, they just don't get it. If you're not Black, or if you're not coming to reality to see what's happening, you won't understand.
Right.
So I just kind of wanted to get you all's take on, you know, how do you feel about this?
I mean, you know, I didn't know if Reggie was going to jump in. I was going to say, you know, I clearly feel qualified to talk about this.
Yeah.
And that's why, I need to have some Black men on here, because.
Yeah. You know, I've had my fair share of incidents, and living out here in Loudoun County, you know, richest county in the country, Black man, I'm qualified to live out here, you know, but, and I'm just being honest about that. But the thing is that I've had some incidents, and no, at any time do I think this is all police force. I have an uncle that works in the DC Police Department, and I know this isn't all police officers by any means, but the rogue ones that are doing this, some of them have a different agenda. And unfortunately, the only way you're going to be able to snake that out is to have the good ones rat out the bad ones. Police themselves, literally, as opposed to policing or not policing the people they're supposed to police themselves. The other thing that bothers me with all this is that you hear the rhetoric about, you know, not just, you know, Jacob Blake, but, you know, the gentleman in Atlanta that lost his life. You know, you keep hearing what they should have done to prevent them from being shot. And listen,
yes.
I'm not going to sit here and say that they were without any error in the whole situation, especially during the climate. Maybe things could have happened differently. But the main thing that should have happened differently was that they shouldn't have been shot.
Yes.
You can't kill a person in your own house if they turn their back to leave your house, if they're robbing your house. So what would make you think that you would shoot an unarmed person broad daylight in their back? So one of the things, again, and not to get long-winded here, guys, but one of the things that I think needs to happen too is in police reform, you have to also look at the scenarios that some of these police officers are also being asked to, you know, do. So my theory is maybe we start having our own faces police our own areas. Maybe we'll have less of these incidents. Maybe, you know, in your training, you have clearly sensitivity training, you have racial training, you have training that is going to be legitimate training. I don't know what those training methods are. I'm just saying that something else has to be done, because I think sometimes you have these police officers who are scared to be around us naturally. That's not a good fit to start. I mean, you can't start your day in fear, because you already have the ammunition that will, if you know what I mean, on you, that will aid in your fear. And now you have these cops out here shooting us for no reason. Again, if you're not strong enough, if you're not prepared enough to be able to, I guess, tussle with someone if they try to resist arrest or whatever, then you call for backup. I mean, or you do something else. But the last thing you do is shoot them. That's nonsense to me. Nonsense.
It is nonsense. And I can just get so sick and tired of seeing that. Like you said, call for backup if you feel like you can't get somebody, you know, one-on-one or, you know, whatever.
Even if you don't call for backup, let's just say the person walks off, gets in their car and drives away. Well, guess what? Now there's a warrant out for their arrest. You know their license number. You know their name clearly. You have the driver's license more than likely. So then you go and send someone to arrest them. But the last resource is shooting them. And unfortunately, that last resource has been the first resource. That's the problem.
And I mean, what happened to tasing somebody?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the officers in that situation tried but failed at tasing Jacob when you know, this whole situation went down. Mm-hmm. So
that's happened. That's not the way to do it. Nah.
Yeah. we talked about you mentioned backup. There were three police officers there in Kenosha. Wasn't one. There were three police officers there. So if you don't have the proper training in order to three people subdue and maintain one guy, and the question of whether they needed to subdue him or not is still under very much question.
Absolutely.
But three people should be able to take one guy out. Secondly, the man was getting in his car.
Yeah.
You had been there for multiple minutes. You knew there were kids in the car. The man is not going to do anything with kids in the car. So
that's when you just let them pull off and then you take this up at another time. That's all I'm saying. Like, is that one man that important that everything has to unfold in that time frame? No, he's not. And I'm not saying his life's not important. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that if you can't apprehend a person at that specific time, you can apprehend them at another time. He's not fleeing anywhere. I mean, he's got his kids. Clearly he was at that house for a reason. I just think that overall, it's just a lack of awareness, a lack of sensitivity. And again, you know, when somebody shoots you one time, you might think that, you know, maybe this was, you know, premeditated. When somebody's just squeezing off on a gun, that shows a lack of, you know, humility, lack of just being a just person.
Right.
That's just repetitively shooting someone in their back. That's cowardly. That's just the only way you can
put it. That is. I mean, seven times? That was uncalled for.
So Reg, you can take this first. So now when you see incidents like this happen, obviously we've seen them. Okay, now of course being bigger on, because social media is, you know, everybody's got their camera out, so you see these incidents quite more often than we did before. So when you see these type of incidents, then you see the 17-year-old Caucasian boy walking down with his AR-15. And he just shot a couple people in self-defense, and he's literally walking down the street, and it's almost like, oh, well, go home, you know. And then not until the next day, or maybe when people start making this big fuss about it, that, you know, something is done or something is said to this young man. So I mean, so when you see things like that, Reggie, what do you think? I mean, you know, how do you put that in perspective when you see other things? Like, you know, because like George Floyd, you know, Ahmaud Arbery, you know, when you see these type of incidents happen.
That's an excellent question. Not only was that a young teenager walking down the street, there were people on both sides of the street yelling to the cops that he just shot multiple people. So it wasn't like he was just walking down the street and happened to have a gun. People were yelling, he just shot multiple people. And they looked at him, rolled right by him. And early in the day, they gave him water.
Yeah.
Told the guys that they were glad for them to be out there with their weapons. Now let a group of armed black men show up on the streets when it's supposedly a curfew and nobody's supposed to be out on the streets. So that's why they're clearing the streets. But armed white people can go out on the streets and they're welcomed and actually given resources. And also let it be clear, the police didn't go get that young man. He turned himself in.
Yeah. Yep.
So he may have still been home.
Yeah.
Right.
Relaxing. But to get to the point of, I was mad when the situation happened. I continue to be mad when the things happen. But in order for this situation to change, unfortunately, there's got to be a systematic change with the way cities and states deal with police forces and their police unions. Absolutely. This qualified immunity that is out there that basically gives police officers so much power where they don't have to talk to anyone after they shoot people for anywhere from a week to sometimes months. The way the law is written, it's almost impossible, even if you charge them, to convict them. So they know there's no recourse or very little recourse. The worst that's probably going to happen is they're going to lose their job. And if they got connections in the law enforcement world, they can just go to another community and get another job.
Yes.
Yep, just like that.
Surprising part. There are several of them who have done that, you know, been in one state and gone to another state and become sheriff or, you know, gotten into law enforcement in another state. It's just unbelievable how that can go on without, without any kind of accountability for what they've done in the past or look back at what brought you here. You know, I think that is that's definitely something that people need to look at. And I think that there needs to be, I hate to say it because states are so individual, but there does need to be some sort of national type of, regulation over what can happen as well, because this is becoming a problem everywhere. And if everybody's laws are different, then, you know, we're not going to see the justice, I think, that we want to see clearly across the board, because every state has it mapped out so differently. So I think that's one of the big things that hopefully when folks sit down and talk, that this is something that they can come to terms with, because I don't believe in the defunding of the police departments, because we need that, we need the police. I mean, this is not, I've never been a fan of that defunding, but we do need to regulate it on a more national level for folks. Everybody's in sync. Everybody knows what's going to happen, next. And like Reggie said, so that the police have some sort of accountability to what they're doing, you have to hold everybody responsible for what's going on. And like I said, I shouldn't be able to go, that's just like with anything. You look at my record, I can't hire you, or you've been to jail, I can't hire you.
Exactly.
You can go across state lines, go somewhere else, and then get a job.
There's consequences.
Right,
everything. And we all, there's laws everywhere. You get in your car, you got to stop at a red light. Laws for everything. And what makes them makes them immune to those laws. And we all know the history of police. As far as the reason why they existed in the first place. Mm-hmm. And that's where that immunity came in, because they were able to do things they had no business doing. We're living that today. The one thing I will say, and Reggie articulated perfectly on this, the one of the things that we have to understand, though, with this whole situation is that we're all part of the media. Our lives as Black people get put out on a microscope to validate or justify things that are happening to us. And that's not with our white counterparts. It's just not. The first thing you hear when you hear about a shooting that involves one of us is, what did that person do? To deserve being shot. There's nothing you can do to deserve being shot in your back. Legally, there's nothing you could have done to deserve being shot in your back. But here it is again. The first thing you're hearing about is Jacob Blake had a knife on him. Do you know how vague that statement having a knife on you is? I see neighbors walking around with Swiss Army knives, just part of their normal keychain.
Right.
They're not out cutting people or anything, but the point is that it's a knife.
It's a knife that they have on them.
Literally, no pun intended, no matter how you cut it, it's a knife. Mm-hmm. Those are like these little sub, you know, dividers that we have to deal with. And it makes us, it's trying to basically criminalize us before or make us come across as an animal and this is why this happened. Cut that mess out.
Cut it out. Yes, because I'm looking at, you know, I look at these videos and I'm looking in the comments and the comments are just terrible on Twitter all the time. They're terrible.
But see, we're animals though. That's what people think. And it's just an old tired narrative that people really know is not true. And NBA players now taking the brunt of fans, you know, discord as far as why are they sitting out games, and they're doing it in hockey, they're doing it in tennis, they're doing it in Major League Baseball, predominantly white sports. Mm-hmm. But the focus comes back to us. Listen, I understand brothers making a lot of money and I ain't mad at them. But at the end of the day, there's more reason for a person that's making that kind of money to possibly sit out, and they're not. So give them credit for that. They're using their platform to try to make some change and bring awareness to this crap that's going on.
Thank you.
Yeah. Go ahead, Reggie.
Yeah. Before we move on to the athletes, there was two things that just jumped out at me. One Lake brought up was the fact that if you look at a lot of these situations where the police officers are shooting people, if you look at the demographics of their police forces, anywhere from 60 to upwards of 90% of those people don't live in the communities they're policing. So that fear factor is huge. Back in the day, you used to have to live in the communities that you were policing, or at least in the city, in the area. So you had an idea of who was in the areas.
You knew the community. You knew the people and faces in the community.
So that's huge. And the other thing you said, there is some debate about it, but the defund the police scenario has been grossly taken out of context, kind of like when Colin Kaepernick originally took his knee and they hijacked that movement. If people really pay attention to what a lot of the defund the police are saying, they're not saying eliminate police. They're saying that in most municipalities, especially large cities, the police budget is anywhere from 50%+ of the entire city budget.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, take some of that money, especially money that you're using to buy military gear for your police forces that they don't need. And instead of the police having 50% of your city budget, maybe they should have 35% of the city budget and take that other 15% and put it to community action things like mental health awareness, increased education. So when someone calls the police, maybe you send a police officer out, but maybe you send a social worker out too, who's actually trained in de-escalating things.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a situation where domestic violence, which is what happened in Kenosha, that was a domestic violence call supposedly, that someone who actually has the proper training can de-escalate the situation, send everybody home and nothing happens, versus sending people out with guns right away where their first instinct is, we've got to break this up. And when they see somebody looks like me, they're really scared.
Right.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. Absolutely.
I just want to put those out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I agree with you because there should be no reason. And police are not trained to, like you said, deal with somebody who's mental or, you know, deal with domestic violence type situations. They're just ready to shoot first, ask questions last. And, you know, most times now you're shooting first and there are no questions to ask because the people are dead.
Mm-hmm. As it was explained to me, like I said, by a family member, who's in the police force is that most of them aren't trained to de-escalate any type of physical situation. Mm-hmm. They're really not. You know, not to knock police officers by any means, mm-hmm. but you know, right. you don't have to do a whole lot of hours, in other words, in order to become a police officer. And maybe that needs to change. That should be one of the hardest yeah. jobs that you get, you know, yeah. that you can be qualified for. You should go through rigorous training. You should go through psych evals. You should go through credit checks. I'm sorry. If we have to do that for a normal job, you know, drug testing, you right. have to do the background check. That is the one job that they should dissect a human being's life before yeah. they give you a gun and a badge. Because now you're seeing what we're dealing with now. You know, that's just the bottom line here. And then when you see them walk past, I know we're going on here, but when you see them walk past the kid with the gun,
yeah,
that was the first thing I thought about. As a Black man, I'm like, if that was me, it wouldn't right. even been 5 seconds of me walking down the street. Something no. would happen. This goes back to the whole thing yep. that happened in Michigan when they stormed their Capitol.
Yeah.
It, I mean, if that was a group of minorities doing that, I don't care, Black, Asian,
right,
Native American, it would have been a bloodbath. Let's just call it the truth.
Oh, yeah.
This is the kind of stuff yeah. we see. So we're not just making this up, complaining and crying and stuff. These are the things that we see, and it's unfair. There is a clear double standard out there, and we're tired of it.
Yeah, and I think that that's what, you know, moving to the, you know, to the players, I think, especially with the NBA, you know, they're tired of it. You know, we're tired of seeing it. You know, we came back to, you know, kind of be a distraction to some of the things that were going on, you know, with the pandemic, again, with the George Floyd, at, you know, at that particular time. So the players are like, well, yeah, we're going to use our platform. And we're not just saying we're going to use our platform. We're going to use
it. We're going to use it. They're taking action.
And so, yeah, some people were knocking it. Oh, you know, they stopped. You know, they didn't want to play the playoff games. Well, people are fed up, point blank, period. People, and if this is what something takes to get noticed, then I don't really have a problem with it. I'm not going to lie to you. It wasn't really the whole bubble thing with the NBA. I was like, eh, maybe I'll watch it. I don't know. Because I just kind of felt, too, that I think even when it first, you know, when they first started and came to the bubble, I thought, you know, a lot of them didn't want to come. A lot of players, you know, decided to opt out because of the social injustice. And we'll get in a lot of them, too, again, with the pandemic. A lot of, you know, for, you know, those two main reasons, a lot of people opted to out from coming back to work. So I don't really have a problem with it per se, because I understand that it you could have been those families could a lot of families were probably touched by this in some way. You know, a cousin, a brother died, a sister died, you know, you know, a mother, a father died because of something like this. So for them, it might take it to heart. So not playing for them means everything when they're working their community to help try to diffuse some of the racist and social injustices that are happening in their communities, because that's where it starts. It starts in your community. And I think that with the NBA and with NBA Cares, I think that they work in the community so well. And the players themselves just have their own you know, programs that they run for their communities. So I like to see that. And I like that there is, and I was talking to Tamika earlier, how it's a little bit easier for the NBA players because they're in the bubble for mm-hmm. them to be together to say, hey, look, we're not going to do this. And for it to be a vast majority of an agreement to not do it. You know, not some players here, some players there, not, you know, but a vast majority of them to agree and say, hey, look, we've got to do something, because you can't keep having this. You know, they're first of all, those players are already away from their families, been away from their families for almost 2 months now.
2 months now, yeah.
So, you know, they don't even get to see their families. I mean, who's to say they would get a phone call to say that was their family member on?
You That's know? True. That's true.
You don't want that to happen. So I think that, you know, Chris Paul does a very good job with the Players Association of making it aware that, you know, this is not how this is going to go down. We need to, you know, do some things to help people understand, for them to understand that we understand, you know, as players, that we understand, because they're people too. I mean, they, you know, this is just their job, you know, in this entertainment for us, but this is just their job. And I think that across the board, when you saw, just like Lake said, you know, Major League Baseball taking, you know, taking some of those games didn't get played, NHL playoffs, they didn't get played.
Huge.
Soccer teams didn't play. NFL practices were cut. I think when you start seeing things like that, you understand that it's affecting everybody. And for these, you know, these sports who bring in big time money, when you start seeing stuff like this and people are paying attention, you know, I think that that's when you start to see that maybe some change is going to happen, because if it doesn't, you know, one kind of affects the other. You know, we're not going to have, if we don't start taking care of something, then, you know, fans are not going to come out and support us. You know, we've got to support them. It goes back and forth. You know, I think the Baltimore Ravens had put out a statement saying the things that they wanted to happen. You know, they need, you know, I believe it was like arrest Breonna Taylor's, you know, killers, the police officers involved in that shooting. They had a whole list of things that they had in the statement that they put out. I believe that now I think that they see everything working together. And, you know, like I was, you know, mentioning in the try to put a little rundown down, because we don't usually have a rundown for our show. I'm not even going to lie to you. It's kind of go off the cuff. But you start to see things like Roger Goodell, you know, come back and say, maybe I should have listened. I'm not really overly excited that he said that, but he did acknowledge at least that much of it, because he still didn't apologize to me, Cap.
Yeah, I was just about to say, he still has not apologized to Cap for that.
No, but he, you know, in a video that Emmanuel, am I pronouncing his last name right?
Acho.
Okay. So, yeah, he had the two-part video series, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, in that video, you know, and like I said, it's really hard with Roger Goodell, because I know that he has to be, he's trying to be fair, but at the same time, he works for the owners.
He's an employee, exactly. So he can only say but so much.
He works for the, you know, he works for the owners. So, but I think that you could tell in the video, you could see where it was affecting him, that he understood, you know. So you get, you know, him kind of backpedaling a little bit on, you know, things that were said that he may have said, you know, earlier on, maybe back in 2017 or 2016 when Colin Kaepernick was kneeling. And he understands that now it wasn't about the flag. It wasn't about the military. It was about these types of things coming out. And I think now, not that Kaepernick could foresee something like this happening, but just look at the scope of it. I think that he brought attention, and I think people went on that, and you see all of these videos, you see all the calls that come in for the police officers that are, you know, these incidents are happening where they're killing or shooting unarmed black men, women. How do you all feel about somebody like Roger Goodell at the highest level in sports that comes out and finally says, hey, look, I think maybe somebody had it right?
I just want to say this. So how I feel, and just how I feel about all of this, Cap pretty much started this movement. Sure. He started this movement in sports 4 years ago. People were paying attention, but they weren't paying attention like they should have been, right?
But Tamika, not to cut you guys off, mm-hmm. I actually go a little further than that. You guys are younger than me, and Reggie might know, but actually, this movement was started back in the 60s.
Yeah.
And then, in more modern times, believe it or not, it was Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, who would not stand for the national anthem in NBA games.
Oh, this really.
We're talking about a great player, and he was pretty much ousted. So. Yeah. what Kaepernick did, and I call Kaepernick's protest was more in the social media age.
Yeah.
That's why I got more fanfare. But yes, I agree with you, though, in the sense that, yes, Kaepernick is pretty much the modern day guy that started these protests, and he should be commended for this. And again, and I know Tamika is your platform. I'm sorry. but I did. I wanted to say that we can't get mad as Black people now when somebody does come out and say they should have, you know, that listen, I should have to us is powerful because at least it means they're acknowledging they should have listened to us. So for Goodell to do it, I don't know if it's in his heart to be, you know, if it's sincere, I don't know, but I know those words were uttered and that's powerful. I mean, that's a start. It's not a finish, but it's a start. Absolutely. To something that he didn't say 3-4 years ago. So we got to accept the good and the bad.
Yes.
Absolutely.
We can't go back and redissect them again and say, but you didn't do this 4 years ago. Right. We're not talking 4 years ago now. We're talking today. And this movement is so powerful. This what we're doing, this social change. I've never seen anything like this in my life.
But see, and that's what I was going to say. I just feel like we probably, if it wasn't for COVID, we probably still wouldn't be seeing this. That's what I think. COVID has sat us down and really put things on a high platform so we can actually see what is going on. Like, you know, Goodell doing what he's doing. Like, this was happening 4 years ago with Cap. But, you know, they ignored it. They slid it under the rug. They wanted to find people or whatever. And, you know, their president just messed it all up. But that's a whole other story. We're not going to go there with that one.
That's a whole show.
Okay. But I just feel like if it wasn't for COVID, a lot of this stuff would not have blown up the way it has blown up. COVID has had us sitting down and really focusing on, you know, what needs to be focused on. So, you know, you take the good and the bad with COVID. People have, you know, are sick and have died. But at the same time, people are more aware of what is going on, you know, within the Black community. You have these people protesting. You have, you know, the NBA players, the athletes, they're taking a stance and they're having conversations now, which I'm so happy about, because we have to have these conversations about race. And they're uneasy. They're going to be uneasy, but they have to be had, because you have to learn about other people's race. And being Black in America, like, as I always say, it's not easy.
Yeah, it's been uneasy for us. It's hard to breathe in air.
So Reggie, what is your take? How do you feel that, you know, are we going, or are people taking that, you know, just like Lake said, you know, can we go back and say, oh, well, you know, you should have known back then, and now, you know, you can't change your stance now? I mean, how does it play out for you?
I think, like Lake said, we don't know his heart, but I do believe that based on how Roger Goodell originally reacted to the NFL players' request for that statement, I guess it's been about 2 months now, when you had the major African-American quarterbacks post that statement that they wanted the NFL to acknowledge some things. And the next day, Roger Goodell did that. And Roger Goodell did that without the owner's quote unquote full improvement.
Right.
He just did it. So that, I'd rather judge people by their actions and what they're doing versus sometimes what they're saying out their mouths. Cause unfortunately today, you can't believe a lot of people of what they're saying out their mouth. So I think he has some goodwill in his heart, so we can't hold him too much to what he didn't do, because again, we have to realize he's an employee, even though he's a well-paid employee.
Right.
The 32 owners, who quite a few of them are major donors to this current administration, and I'll leave it at that. Certain things to happen, and he had to follow directions. So let's applaud him for moving forward and at least admitting that he's doing something. I also like to applaud Steve Bisciotti. So far, as far as I know, he's been the only NFL owner that's actually come out publicly, put his name on stuff, not a organizational statement. He's made statements. But to me, right. But to Mika's point, again, kind of like what I said earlier about our show, this pandemic has just accelerated stuff that's happened. If we didn't have the pandemic, people wouldn't have been home. Chances are the George Floyd video may have been shown once on the news and that would have been it. Not over and over and over again because there wasn't enough content to fill all these news things. It may not even happen. Ahmaud Arbery probably would never have been on CNN multiple nights out of the week, following him every week, trying to figure out what's going on. So all of this has just brought everything that we've been seeing for years, and in my case, decades, to life. Lastly,
been so bad, huh?
Yeah. Lastly,
and
let me not forget the WNBA and their wobble. What they found out is these places of bringing all these athletes together and being able to say, before we even show up, these are some things that we want to have happen, or we're not coming.
Right.
Yeah.
That's shown the athletic world, not just in basketball, but the athletic world, we've got real power.
Yep.
We've had it all along, but they've never been able to organize enough to get together and say, we can make demands. And then most recently with the NBA saying, we're not playing. And let's give the Milwaukee Bucks real credit. They started this.
Oh, yeah.
They were willing to forfeit their game. A lot of people are publicizing that. They think it was a coordinated effort. The Milwaukee Bucks said, this is in our home state, less than an hour away from where we play. We can't do this, and we'll forfeit a playoff game. And then the other team said, no, we're not going to let you do that. And then it exploded to the point where we've got predominantly white sports saying, no, it's not right. We're not going to play either. NHL, the NHL players went to the NHL and said, we're not going to play these next couple of days.
Yeah.
And you either be with us or we're going to make a big stink about it. That's crazy. I never thought I would see anything like that.
Never.
Powerful.
Right.
Very, very powerful.
And this is the power now of branding as well. You know, so when a Nike athlete sees a high-powered Nike athlete over in the NBA doing something, they're going to look at that like, you know what, that's my brother. I mean, this is and in fairness, a lot of these guys have probably become friends, you know, outside of their sport just because of the brand they're all part of. You almost have to follow suit now. And that's just the way it is. Guys now are looking at other guys and saying, you know what? If LeBron, who has all this power, all this money, all these resources, can back up what he's saying, how can you not listen? We talking sports at this second. I'm a Jordan guy. You know, it makes me cringe when I hear LeBron the GOAT. That's lunacy.
That's
but
another show.
You know what? When it comes to like his social stances and things that he's trying to accomplish for us. He is the GOAT in that regard. He's doing something that Michael's now starting to do things, but I wish Michael had done this at the height of his fame, you know, because some of this stuff may have changed. I'm not putting it on his shoulders. I'm just saying that when you have that kind of platform, you have a voice, you have to use it. Tamika, you've known me for years, and you know over the last year, I've started speaking out on things.
Yeah.
I think I got to a point where it was like, you know what? God's given me an opportunity here that a lot of us are trying to work to get. I can't be comfortable. I just can't.
Mm-hmm.
I have to be in a situation where I can try to help. And it's not just our race. I'm talking about anything that's unjust. I have to say something. But naturally, I got to look out for us. That's just the bottom.
Yeah.
again, not to get long-winded again, but when I see LeBron doing that and he has way more to lose than I do, mm-hmm. he doesn't care. So who? Why would I not do something like that? Why would any of us, the four of us, we're using this right now as a platform to speak about this. And, you know, everyone's been eloquent. Everyone's been, you know, as far as your viewpoints, I mean, it's been great. This is the kind of stuff that we have to do more of. And it can't just fall away once we're able to get back out into society and COVID's lifted. We have to keep doing this.
Yeah, I agree. Constant conversation. I think that, like I said, I think, like you said, when people look up to, because Jordan was just on the last players call, I think, with the players and owners, they had a call and he was on there, you know, how can I help? You know, basically, how can I help? You know, let's have the conversation. And yeah, you know, a lot of people used to criticize him a lot, you know, then back in the day too, about him not being able to, well, not saying anything, especially with the shoes, the price of his shoes, and you know how, you know, young black folks are out, you know, black people are out here trying to get his shoes, and they're, you know, $200-$400. Doesn't he have any, you know, control over the price and all this kind of stuff? But you know, but people always criticize, ready to criticize. But I think, but that just shows too that as a community we care. Mm-hmm. Hey, look, we know you have that, but we see that you have it, but how come you don't see it? You know, how do you not see that you have this platform? And like, you know, just like Blake said, LeBron sees that. I have this platform. A Chris Paul sees that. I have this platform. This is where we're going to make the change when, you know, if we can, because this is all I have. You know, if I don't have anything else, this is all I have. So, like, you know, like I said, at our level, we try to do what we can to make things known. I mean, you know, I have a son. I try to talk to him. I try to let him know, hey, look, you know, we see stuff like this, you have to pay attention. And you don't all the time have to see LeBron James. You don't always have to see, you know, like Roger Goodell. You don't have to see somebody who has that kind of power to say something. You yourself can say something. If you see that it's wrong, then open your mouth and say, nobody can take that away from you if you open your mouth and say it. No. And some of the best people in history have been those who have opened their mouths and said something and have died for that something, because it must be right. They, you know what I'm saying? You don't, you know, fall like that because you're wrong.
More than I think that's what we're seeing with our white friends. Let's just call it. Like,
oh yeah. Oh yeah.
What we're seeing now is a lot of them are. I mean, let's be brutally honest here. There's an old guard that's kicking and screaming right now today. I'm just gonna call it like it is. They're kicking and screaming to their grave.
Oh yeah.
Because they see all this change going on, and this isn't their country. Well, welcome to our world. Welcome to the world of a lot of people. Welcome to the world of unjust treatment of women. I mean, these are things that have been going on. So now we do have to give credit to other races that are walking and protesting with us. Mm-hmm. Because let's face it, some of them have a lot to lose by walking with us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they do. Absolutely. They sure do.
Right. And for them to do it, I commend them for that, because that's all we need. We need more people to stick together to show that you're stronger of strength in numbers. That's just mm-hmm. the way it is. I went on a friend's show this week. We went to college together at Penn State. You know, to make I got shout my
I was waiting for it.
You know that. You know, we are. So we go back. We used to call football games together in school, and he's white. He asked me to come on to talk about what we're talking about now. And he said he couldn't think of anybody he wanted on his show. And that was sincere. And I appreciated it. But I said to him, I said, we need you to keep this platform going when I'm off the air. You know, if you have another white guest on, I still need you to keep this going, because that's what this is about. It's not about only talking about it when we're around. It's
right.
Talking about it when we're not around, and it's only your faces. That's what we have to do and keep this thing going. We don't want to have to. I mean, I would have loved for us to just talk sports. That's what we do. But the fact that we have to meld politics and social status and all this stuff in with what we're doing in sports, man, I mean, we wear a lot of hats in our race.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Like, and I say that all the time.
It really is. It's really hard that you have to always be on your toes and your head on a swivel. I mean, that's just not the way.
It's kind of like we're kind of like chameleons in a sense.
Yeah. But you the strength of our race and resolve is clearly showing. And, you know, for young Black kids out there, I hope they see pride in what's going on, because this has been a long time coming and it's not done. It's not even started, frankly. This is just the pots on the stove and it's getting warm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's not boiling over anything like that.
Go ahead, Reggie, and go ahead and say what's on my mind, Reggie, because I can see it on your face. Go ahead and say what's on my mind.
Maybe I'll hit it. Well, one thing, I think Doc Rivers said it best this week. I should just be a coach.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to be all these things. I don't know about from the female aspect, but he also pointed out I shouldn't have to have a talk with my son about what he needs to do and not do interacting with the police, because other people don't have to do that.
Right.
And we're still having to do that. But I want to move this. At least talking about action, I think athletes have found that not only do they have platforms now that they can start conversations, now they're demanding action items and action points. They're doing things that are taking it to the next step. Again, I like to go to the ladies, the WNBA and the Wubble. The whole, and I'm not going to mention the name, the senator in Georgia who was actually appointed, never actually got elected.
Yeah.
And her statements that she made about her own organization, that she's a partial owner. They realized after about a week that they were just helping her. So they stopped saying her name.
Mm-hmm.
Then they did their research, found out the person who was running against her, and publicly went after her by promoting her opponent and the opponent's platform.
Yep.
I got to give a shout out to the Mystics.
Yeah.
The WNBA was going to play this week. They even came together as a group, was going to play. And then the Mystics said, no, we're not doing this. This doesn't make sense. And not only are we not going to do this, we're going to make a statement when we make our statement that we're not playing by wearing shirts with seven gunshots in the back.
Yeah.
Let you see what this is. So we've taken the making people aware to now we're going to make you start doing things. And that's the power that athletes are seeing. And the next big move I'm waiting to see is the NFL. Where these NFL players, because that is the biggest behemoth in sports.
Yep.
And now that the biggest position in the NFL is now dominated by African-American quarterbacks, if they make a statement, that changes everything.
It's change coming. The game.
It's coming. It's coming. And you and I know the NFL is normally the slowest of the leagues to act. We know that. And that's why I think the whole thing with Kaepernick blindsided some people, because they couldn't believe somebody had the gumption to be an individual, you know. So they've traditionally been, this is a sport I've covered for a long time, they've been traditionally the slowest to move on things. That's because of the owners. That's clearly because of the owners.
Mm-hmm.
I am watching the NFL big time, like an owl.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
I think we all are at this point.
And I think it's coming. I just do. You know, you can't stand back idly by and watch your counterparts in other leagues make these powerful statements. And then on top of that, you know, let's face it, a lot of NFL guys always talk about how they wish they could make the money the NBA guys make or the Major League Baseball players make. Well, those guys make money, but they're using their power in that money to make some change. Maybe you make some more money if you take some stances too, you know, and that's, I'm serious, you know, because come on, guys, at the end of the day, this is all about money. This is all about money. And when your cash cow dries out, now all of a sudden you listen. Right here in this town, you know, this the football team changed, you know, to Washington football team. Would this have happened if Nike and FedEx and all these, you know, powerful organizations who give them money said, you know what, we're okay with the name. We wouldn't have heard anything about this. But the bottom line is the bottom line. You know, they came and said, you got to change this. Money talks. And it made them do this. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be cynical here. But T, you, I'm sure you feel like this. There's no way they would have changed this if those organizations, those powerful money Fortune 500 companies didn't tell them something.
Oh, of course. Of course. And that's all I kept saying. I said, when they start to hit the pockets, then we're going to see some change here. And look what happened.
Yeah.
We saw some change.
Probably why I'm here right now. I'm saying this.
You know, to that, I'm sorry that you are here, but I'm happy that you're here too. But I get it. Yeah. I get it.
That's fine. I'm okay.
Good. That's good trouble.
Right. That's good trouble.
Okay. I mean, yes. Good trouble.
The truth, man.
We've got about 4 minutes left.
Yeah.
So I just kind of want to wrap this up. Like, this was such a good conversation, and I'm like, I'm so glad that you guys came on because we value your opinions and all that y'all, you know, stand for on your shows as well. So any final thoughts on this and how we can, you know, move forward as a race, as a country?
Individuals.
Red, yeah, individuals. Reg, I'll start with you.
We have to hold the people that we elect accountable. But first, we have to hold ourselves accountable for people that we have in our communities that either are cynical or feel disillusioned. We have to get them back to the political game because the power is being able to change laws. So we have to vote not only on a national level, not only every 4 years for the president. We got to vote every time there's a vote for especially the local and state levels, because those are the things that affect you more on the day-to-day basis.
Yes.
So please get everybody together that you know that's in your social media networks. Make sure they are voting and vote early. And unfortunately, and I have plenty of family in this organization, we can't rely on the Postal Service to make sure that these ballots get delivered. They're going to do the people at work are going to do everything that they can to get them there. But unfortunately, there are powers above them that are trying to stop it. So if you take the ballot to your local election office yourself, I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Lake.
Well said, Reggie. I mean, you kind of took some things that I was going to say. You know, we have to. Yeah. This all starts from within. You know, it's just like anything. It starts in your house. And it filters out after that. And I just think that, you know, for us right now, this is a very dynamic time we're living in. And we cannot let that momentum, you know, just basically be content with what we're seeing. This isn't enough. And, you know, again, I'm making it a point to say on every platform I go on, I'm not asking to be given anything. And no hardworking, diligent, good, patriotic African-American wants anything handed to them. You know, we want to show you that. Forget that we're working for it. No, we're already qualified for things. We've been doing the work. We're just saying now, open your eyes and give us opportunities. And you'll be surprised how much more money you could make. You know, how much more, you know, inclusion with more people coming in as consumers that look like us. There's money in this. There's opportunities in this. And that's all we're asking. The other thing I will say is that we have to help each other. You know, we can't have that crab in a barrel mentality. when you get to a certain level, it is not for you to have gotten up there by stepping on people. You got up there because some people were helping you. Nobody did anything by themselves. So you have to bring people with you. And with that being said, I just want to say that you two lovely ladies, this show's awesome. And, you know, I have the utmost respect for what you're doing. So with that said, I need this show, this link, and, you know, so I can get it up. Your show on my site.
Oh yeah.
Of the podcast. So yeah. Tamika, we've been talking about it. Let's get this done so Monday it's up there. Okay.
Okay. Got it.
All right, cool.
Thank you.
Okay, Mika, how about you? What you got to say?
I mean, I'm just gonna piggyback off of what, you know, both of them said, especially Reggie, about voting. Because, you know, we always talk about voting little and, you know, often as we can, as we should, because voting changes things. And just, you know, at the local level, instead of always at, you know, for the president. I mean, this is a time that we all need to just get out there, vote. Like you said, like, help one another, because that whole crab in a barrel, we definitely have to stop that.
Gotcha.
That is just not, I don't know. I've never had that mentality, thank God. So, you know, I need others to come with it, because somebody has helped you and nobody, you know, you're not getting somewhere by yourself. It doesn't happen that way. So
that's part of systematic racism.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. That's the key word, system.
Systematic.
We're always having to play that an extra game. You know, I'm tired of having to play two Monopolies at one time. You know? I just want my little car on the board.
Right. Absolutely. All right. Well, I'll close out. I think, well, you know, Tamika, I don't even think I could say my name. Watch something good, because, you know, that's what I always end with. Watch something good. But what I really, you know, hope and see as it's been through the hundreds of years, obviously, we ourselves have to have help from others. We don't get women's rights without having men help us help the women get women's rights. We don't have civil rights unless we have all the other races helping us to get civil rights. So social injustice to me is no different. We need everyone to help and see what is going on out here. So whether that means you vote, and I don't want to say I don't care, but do something. If it's voting is how you think you can help, if it's getting out of the community, if it's protesting, if it's having your own show, if it's however it is that you can get out and show that you are not as an American, regardless of color. If you can't show somebody that, hey, look, this is not right, it needs to change. Get out there, do it. Do whatever you can, because like I said, it's going to take everyone to make this happen. It can't just be a small group. A small group can start, but we need everyone's involvement to make it happen and become an actual reality. So to say all that to say, it really kind of, you know, touches me every time, because I just have a young son, you know, and I can't see him. I only have the one. I can't have that phone call. I can't have looking at the TV and seeing it. I don't want that. So it's going to take everybody to make it happen. So hopefully everybody gets out there and does their little thing. Like I said, every little bit helps. You don't have to do something big. You don't have to do something big. But you got to do something. Everybody's got to do something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then just one last thing to end. I just wanted to say, rest in peace to Chadwick Boseman.
Oh, my God, girl, yes.
I mean, Wakanda forever.
Yeah.
King T'Challa.
Yeah.
Nobody knew what he was going through. This man
was
making movies. and had cancer, colon cancer, and in between doing chemo and having surgeries and, you know, losing weight and people talking about them, you never know what somebody is going through.
Yeah, absolutely. So
be nice to everybody. Be kind to everybody. Mm-hmm. You just never know. Nobody wants to lose anybody to cancer. No one wants to lose anybody to anything. But, yeah, you know, I know how it is to lose someone to cancer. My grandparents, I lost both to cancer. So I know how that is. That's a lot, and it's a lot of stress on family. It's a lot of stress on the person, everything. But rest in peace. Like, that just, that came as a shocker to everybody.
He came across.
And his camp to not leak that in 4 years says a lot about his circle.
I was going to say, that man was a true superhero, literally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is that that's how he's going to be remembered by a lot of us as a true hero, literally. So that's a person that your son can look up to, you know. Yeah,
sure. There you go.
Yeah.
Sure, indeed.
Yeah, all man. Right. So
thank you so much.
Love you, lady.
I definitely
appreciate having y'all on and having this discussion. This has been another great episode of Ladies POV, and we will be back next week. Peace.
See you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
No, thank you, gentlemen. Most definitely.